people with one song, with one voice.
Which way Nigeria? Which way Nigeria? Which way to go?
Which way to go?
Nigeria, ye people who are me. Come on, God of a gen. Tori Kosi Pomiro, Tia Milo.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Celebrating Nigeria at 60 with historical nostalgic programs and music in the spirit of the diamond anniversary of our nation. From October till December 2020, keep on listening to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and we are starting fully our Diamond Anniversary live broadcast on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed, giving you positive Nigerian energy, of course, radiating positive Nigerian narratives. We are the authentic source of Nigerian information. All right, congratulations to everybody. Nigeria is 60 today. Happy, 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 happy Diamond Anniversary. Of course, on a day like this, it will be appropriate for us to review our nation to see how far the journey so far. And of course, you know that Spirit of Nigeria Radio will always bring you experts, opinions, and of course, solutions to some of Nigeria's challenges. My name is Toya Rulogun, and I'd like to welcome you again to our Diamond Day broadcast, Diamond Nigeria, Diamond Day broadcast on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Just to be sure, Abuja is agog. I can see somewhere in Eagle Square, President of Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari, is going on his parade. Okay, today we can see Baba with his gloves and masks. And of course, some people are contending the fact that Nigeria shouldn't be gathering so much people in this COVID times in Abuja celebrating 60th anniversary. The 60th independence of Nigeria. All right, to guide me and to help us in doing this today, we have none other than Dr. Dele Shetaolu, Senior Lecturer of Political Science Department, Lagos State University. Dr. Shetaolu, you're welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Good morning.
All right, good morning. Say hello to our viewers in diaspora. Some are just waking up. Some are just sleeping all over the world. Maybe Australia, Canada, US and the UK.
Good morning, Nigerians in different parts of the world, and I should extend warm felicitations on the country's independence.
All right, thank you very much. That's appropriate and that's good. This morning, we woke up to President Muhammadu Buhari addressing the nation. I'm sure you've listened to the speech, have you?
Yes, I did.
All right, so what immediately jumps out at you from what President Muhammadu Buhari said today to his fellow countrymen?
We should situate it within context. We know it's a ritual that every year the Edo State Commander-in-Chiefs would deliver public address on the occasion of the country's independence.
Mm, yeah.
But beyond that, the question is how substantive is the presentation.
Mm.
The question is to what extent does the presentation address the substantive issues bordering on Nigeria's political economy? To what extent is the state, you know, responding to the challenges of nation building in Nigeria? And to what extent does the presidency, you know, intend to tackle in terms of when and how the challenges confronting the polity and the economy? If you ask me in concrete terms, the speech did not address substantive issues. I wasn't impressed. I wish the speech was longer. Two, I wish that speech would have addressed, major and fundamental issues in more concrete terms. Three, I would prefer the speech told Nigerians and the international community how the challenges confronting Nigeria in terms of security, economy, and politics, and electoral democracy, etc., would be handled.
Mm.
You know, the speech was escapist, in terms of commitments to dealing with and resolving those challenges. In concrete time, you know, it could be better. I wish I'd listened to more resourceful and, you know, speech. I wish I'd listened to a speech that had been a product of deeper reflections on the contradictions and the structural distortions within the state and economy in Nigeria.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I like the way you've put it. Okay, let's appraise it. Let's start from something that anybody would not grudge us or contend, which is the issue of we are still a nation. And I think Mr. President's speech alluded to that. Peace, our ability to live together. 60 years down the line, are you surprised that Nigeria is still a nation? Or one indivisible nation, even though there are cracks?
Well, in the first instance, I'll contend that Nigeria is a nation.
Mm.
You know, Nigeria is not. We're still contending with the problem of identity.
Mm.
The identity crisis is still a major issue in Nigeria, and we're still trying to resolve it. The question of religion, the question of ethnicity, the question of regionalism, statism, etc. You know, these are identity questions Nigeria is grappling.
So are we a country?
Yes. Nigeria is a nation state. It's a nation state. It's not a nation.
Yes.
It would assume the status of a nation within the context of the dissolving, you know, of ethno or subnational identities into identifiable and predictable national identity. We are not at that point. The fault lines and the centrifugal forces are far more pervasive. And okay, they're still constituting serious threats to its sustenance, continuity, you know, and existence.
All right. Okay. So, well, but at least we are still in some form of peace. Mr. President alluded also to the peace. I mean, are we in peace in Nigeria?
Well, if you ask me, it's a piece of the graveyard.
Yeah.
And the president's allusion to peace is escapist
mm.
and uncritical of the developmental challenges confronting Nigeria. What peace are we referring to? When the serving governor, you know, was nearly killed twice in a week.
Mm.
When dissidents rained bullets, and it could have been otherwise. Mm. What would Nigeria be telling the international community if the sitting governor had been killed? What peace are we talking about when the state is characterized by all different forms of violence in different aspects of the country, from banditry to kidnapping to gun running and the rest of it? There's been tremendous proliferation of small arms in Nigeria to the extent that the state is nearly helpless, you know, in terms of mopping those weapons and ensuring security. The last point I need to make is, should we be posing peace without raising the question of justice and fairness and equity among the federating units in Nigeria? To what extent is Nigeria fair to the federating units? To what extent does Nigeria ventilate, you know, the question of equity? To what extent are we pursuing injustice? To what extent do the component units feel they have sufficient commitments to Nigeria to the extent of fair representation and fair access and equitable access to resources? These, for me, are major and fundamental issues we should be dealing with.
All right, fine. I'm sure we'll deal with them as we go along on this transmission, this 60th independence anniversary of a Nigerian nation. But it can't all be lows. I'm sure there are some highs. I've had quite a number of people also talking about the president's speech in terms of free and fair elections, as demonstrated by, you know, the last election in Edo State. Some consider that a high point, that Mr. President, and I'm sure we'll still go way back, I mean, because this is the sitting president, so, you know, he's the one who gave the speech, and of course, he made reference to it. So just for the sake of our listeners, we're not here to look at President Muhammadu Buhari alone. We'll still go back way back in time. But today looks like a day that people are saying, okay, Mr. President, you did well. No interference in Edo State.
Well, if you ask me, at the risk of appearing too critical, the president's allusion to a Edo election is commendable. It does appear the choice, the preferred choice of the people of Edo prevailed. But beyond that, I wouldn't like the president to create the impression of political opportunism. Mm. You know, you know, to what extent are we certain that the Edo experience will be replicated in subsequent elections? I hope, I really hope that the Edo experience will not be a flash in the pan. I hope such attitude will be sustained. And I'd like to use this opportunity to challenge the president to, you know, to sign into law the Electoral Act, the amendments to the Electoral Act. We need a review of the Electoral Act, you know, to create new frontiers that will deepen democracy in Nigeria, you know. And we should not lose sight of this. There's still issues. There's still major threats to Nigeria's democracy. Threats that have the potential of de-democratizing the polity, you know, voter buying, voter apathy, the election of minority government, and so on and so forth. These are still serious issues we should be contending with, and the independence of the Electoral Commission. I am not in doubt that the Electoral Commission has had to grapple with some forms of interference. The politicization of the police in terms of the role in the election, the equal politicization of the judiciary in terms of its intervention in deciding electoral matters. These are serious and fundamental issues we should be dealing with. We have no doubt to it. So it might be too early to conclude that their due experience, you know, to use their due experience as basis to, you know, to draw conclusions about our democracy. The booby traps are still there. The fault lines are still heavy. And we need to do a lot more to strengthen our democracy. If you ask me, at the point, there were discussions along the line of democratic consolidation in Nigeria. Yeah. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure prevalent discussion at this point in time should be about democratic consolidation. There are threats to democracy and democratization in Nigeria. There are threats of democratic reversals. We should be dealing with those reversals at structural, institutional, and attitudinal levels. We need to do a lot more.
All right, okay, so now they are talking about threats to democracy. Let's go a little bit back in time and let's see. Military rule democracy. The military ruled us for quite a while. And let's look at, we started from a civilian democracy after independence. Suddenly the military came in. And of course, finally, we are back to democracy. Now, this, what's your own assessment? Some people will say, maybe we were just better off doing the military than the civilian, and some say, look, the worst civilian government is better than, you know, the best of the military.
I still prefer civil rule. Yes. Secondly, the military regimes in Nigeria made Nigeria worse in the long run. Though we could assess the military in terms of infrastructure development, you know, majorly. I recall the Yakubu Gowon government, particularly, you know, within the context of oil economy, did tremendously well in terms of building infrastructure. Yeah,
that was the time they said Nigeria didn't have a problem. Yes. Our problem was we had too much money, we didn't know how to spend it.
We should also recall that Nigeria's foreign policy in the military constitute aspects of the glorious past of Nigeria's foreign policy, particularly under Murtala Ramat Mohammed. You know, particularly, you recall that the Institute of International Affairs, led by Professor Bolaji Akinyemi, made tremendous impetus and bold and intellectual impetus into Nigeria's foreign policy direction. You also recall that Nigeria's economy at that point in time, you know, had a surplus-based economy in terms of its richness. So the economic buoyancy actually placed Nigeria in the position, and with the leadership style, actually place Nigeria in the position to assert itself on African affairs and global issues. I'll recall, you know, the famous speech by late General Murtala Ramat Mohammed, Africa has come of age in Addis Ababa. I recall Nigeria's role, you know, in securing the independence for Northern and Southern Rhodesia, you know. I recall Nigeria's role in the struggle against apartheid and so on.
Yeah, these are the issues that people are raising, and they're saying,
beyond that,
was it not better for us?
But beyond that, we need to appreciate some fundamentals. The military is a hierarchical based institution, and it's not structured. It is not acculturated for democracy.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Secondly, you know, power became centralized under military rule. In fact, the military actually started the decline, actually defederalized Nigeria. Nigeria in the First Republic was a federal state to a large extent, and powers were dispersed between the federated units and the center. The emergence of military ensured the reversal of the decentralization process, and it ensured the concentration to a large extent of powers in the center, and that created distortions in our federal arrangement. To the extent that the arguments about whether Nigeria is still a federal state or a unitary state. But I would insist that Nigeria is still a federal state with a largely centralized, leaning, more centralized federal arrangement than decentralized, secondly, the military supervised transition, particularly Babangida's transition, created serious distortions within the polity. You recall Babangida's twin political and economic program, the political transition, and what Larry Diamond and Keith Green and Oyeleye Oyedira and others captured as transition without end. It created hope. It dashed the same hope. It created political parties, drew fiat, and it annulled an election on June 12, 1993 that was considered free, fair, and participatory. It also implemented an economic, reform program called Structural Adjustment Program. The idea of SAP was to correct balance of payment deficit and to reduce public sector expenditure and to redeem the economy, and so on and so forth. But what did we have in the long run? Structural Adjustment Program under the military, particularly Babangida and later Abacha, impoverished the Nigerian people, alienated the Nigerian people from state actors, okay? It deepened poverty. It led to the disappearance of the middle class. It led to factory closures, and Nigeria's external debt portfolio equally increased. Debt service ratio increased to the extent that, financial commitment to social delivery suffered. You recall the various protests in 1986, 87, 89.
Yeah.
Against structural adjustment program, against the state, and so on and so forth. In concrete, you also recall that some of the worst forms of corruption in Nigeria occurred under the military. The military, in concrete terms, did a lot more damage to Nigeria. You recall that as in 1999, there were groundswell of opinions against military dictatorship. Nigerians were tired with military rule, and Nigerians wanted civil rule. And Nigeria begun with civil rule since 1999. If you ask me, the journey has not been fantastic, but we'll still prefer to build our structures, to build democratic institutions, to sustain a military. Military dictatorship was equally characterized by denials of fundamental human rights and press freedom, and so on and so forth. But we've had a somewhat freer space under political regimes to discuss Nigeria, to agree about Nigeria, to disagree about Nigeria, to engage in debates and robust debates on the national question, the future of the country, and so on and so forth. If you ask me, the debate on the future of Nigeria and the secession question has been far more robust under civil rule than military. So in summary, I would still prefer civil rule. Certainly not military. Military globally is not a trend. It's jaded as a trend. You recall that the most recent intervention in political management in Africa, actually drew the hair of ECOWAS to the extent that the ECOWAS community insisted that the military could not supervise an interim transition. Could not supervise transition to political regime in Mali. So that presupposes that ECOWAS and the global community are not disposed to military intervention. It's become obvious that military rule, it's no longer in vogue, it's no longer fashionable.
It's an aberration now.
And it's become an aberration. And the mood of the international community does not favor it.
All right. I think that looks like a very good place for us to take a pause. When we come back after this short interlude, then we will be talking to somebody else. We will be contributing to our Diamond Nigeria broadcast on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Keep it locked on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. We are still giving you positive Nigerian energy, and you've been hearing the voice of Dr. Dele Shetolu, Senior Lecturer, Political Science Department, Lagos State University. We'll be right back with another intervention by somebody you would also love to listen to.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
We are the dream. We are the nation. We are part of this. Yes, we are so amazing. That's the least we shall be. At the heart of the nation, changing history. How can they say that we are finished? We have just begun. When we have nowhere else to run, do we have nowhere else to go? So get out of the way of the land of our dreams. We are the nation, we are part of this. Oh, oh. We are the nation, we are part of this. Whoa.
That is Soul Spirit of Nigeria Radio, giving you positive Nigerian energy, bringing Nigerians in the diaspora up to speed on a day like this, 1st of October 2020. On a day like this, that Nigeria is celebrating 60 years of independence from British colonial rule. Of course, we are the authentic source of Nigerian information to the diaspora, Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And we've been chatting, we've been conversing with Dr. Dele Shetolu, Senior Lecturer, Political Science Department, Lagos State University. All right, I've heard you. And you say you don't want to be a critic. But tell me, what are the high points in the 60 years? There must certainly be some positive things, you know, that have, you know, happened in the evolution of the Nigerian nation. we are finding it difficult to get some positives about Nigeria.
I begin with the survival of the Nigerian slaves.
Okay, that's a
Nigeria
good one.
Nigeria had the civil war, 1967 to 70, and the Nigerian state almost disintegrated, but somehow it did not. And the state at that point in time pursued the three Rs, you know, and so on and so forth. The factor remains that the state is still characterized by major distortions and imbalances that we need to address. Yes, it has survived. And if you ask me, I would prefer that Nigeria remains federal.
Hello, good day, sir. How are you, sir?
Good day.
My name is Toye Arulogu from Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Thank you for joining us on today's analysis of the most crazy day, which is our diamond anniversary, which is the day Nigeria got independence 60 years ago. You're welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Yeah, how are you? It's nice to join you.
All right, thank you.
Day.
Yeah, for our listeners, I'm speaking with Professor Adele Jinadu. He's an adjunct professor, Political Science, University of Lagos. And Prof, just to be sure, I have Dr. Dele Shetolu, Senior Lecturer, Political Science Department, Lagos State University, here with me in the studios, and we'll just be doing this together. Give us a sense on a day like this. What's your own summary? How do you surmise, you know, Nigeria's 60 years of existence as an independent nation?
Well, I think that so far, so good. And what I mean by that is that it is remarkable that our federation has remained one, despite flaws, despite problems, and despite rising tide of ethno-nationalism. What I say is remarkable because if you look back 60 years when we started, many federal systems have failed. The Federation of the West Indies, Yugoslavia, Uganda, and many others. So, but we have not fallen apart, even though we had a civil war, but we've gone beyond the civil war. But remnants of the civil war still remain. But the important thing is that we have not failed as a federation in the sense of the various component units going on their own way. And when you look back at those component units that have gone away in other federations, you find that why they left the federation, the issues that made them leave, they are still facing them. So I think it's important we realize that you know, many federations that came up at the same time, even Pakistan, you know, the East and West, they've broken apart after leaving the Indian subcontinent in 1948. So I think it's important that we take that into account. And it must also be our guide in looking forward, that even though there are problems, it is better for us to remain as one than to splinter into various groups. Because when you splinter into various groups, problems within the group that have succeeded will again come up to create problems of nation building for them. So breaking away is an option, but it's an option that one must be careful in pursuing. But there are problems definitely, And I'm disappointed that almost 21 years after this republic, we have, you know, problems with our elections. We have problems with ethnicity and hate speech. Hate speech is on the rise, reflecting ethno-religious animosities in the country. My other disappointment is that, you know, those who fought against the Abacha regime, who fought against the military, and particularly the Abacha regime, and who are now in government, have not lived up to expectations.
Wow.
They are reflecting what they fought against in terms of the assault on free speech in the country. So I think it's important we bear that in mind. There are problems, and we need to realize that those problems are there, but the solution is not to the problems, is not in scattering the Federation, but in trying to see how we can improve on what we have. Not in rejecting what we have or breaking it up.
All right, I'm sure Dr. Shetolu, you know, agrees with you on that, you know, and that's what he was alluding to. All right, your intervention. Just hold on, sir. Listen to us.
Sir, I appreciate the interventions of the illustrious, you know, Professor Adelaide Jinodusu. Warm greetings, sir.
Thank you, Shetolu. How are you?
Oh, very well. Thank you, sir. It's good to
nice
talk to you.
Nice to hear
you,
your voice. Yes,
sir.
Thank you. Yes.
Sir.
Always proud of you.
That's very well. Thank you, sir. I'd like to respond to one or two aspects, sir. Those federations, some of the federations that collapsed, you know, were voluntary in nature.
Where?
I said some of the nations, some of the federations that collapsed were voluntary in nature. But,
yes.
And that aided the disintegration process on the basis of the fact that there were serious differences, and some of those differences were not reconcilable, you know.
Yes.
I'm not sure that Nigeria will probably still be a country if there were to be the clause of voluntary union within, you know. And I suppose that, you know, I don't know that a federation ordinarily should include a clause of voluntary unionism and not a compulsion. You know, Nigeria to a large extent has been held through force majeure, and we're not doing enough to build confidence among the federating units. I appreciate that. I would actually prefer a federation. And the global trends is that states are aggregating rather than disaggregating. But there are forces within Nigeria, social political forces that are resisting shift to addressing the centrifugal forces that threatens the future and the survival of the Federation. Sir. How long would Nigeria endure, you know, in the light of those structural distortions and those challenges and the contradictions?
All right, Prof, you heard him. You want to give us your
reason?
Yes.
Yeah, let me just react to that briefly. You know, the way we have approached federalism in this country is built on assumptions of democracy. Federalism and democracy is intertwined. They are intertwined in our country. Some of the federations that have failed, particularly the Yugoslav one and even the Soviet Union, were not democratic in the sense that they claimed that they were giving rise to nationalities, giving nationalities home rule in their homelands. But in fact, it was a dictatorial one-party system, and it was not democratic in the sense of liberal democracy. And I think what has happened in the case of Nigeria is that democratic space that is available has provided room for provided space for contentation, space for pursuing unity in diversity. There is no political system that can be homogeneous. There are cracks in them. Take Britain, for example. The Scots, the Welsh, I mean, they are still not happy with Great Britain or with the United Kingdom.
True.
But they are still fighting within that space because of the democratic openings that they have to pursue their various interests. You know, until Ethiopia, for example, the assumption was that there is no federal system that makes room for secession. There's none. But and the only one that was the Soviet Union, and they never allowed anyone to secede if they wanted to secede. That was the whole breakdown. Then Ethiopia, the new Ethiopia constitution provided for states to secede. But again, you know, during Meles' system, that was just on paper, it was not allowed for. So I think we should not look at this whole question of if there is going to be separation, then it cannot be unilateral. There must be, the assumption is that there is a pact creating the federation. And if any party wants to go out of that contract, then it has to be negotiated. The terms of the secession has to be negotiated. So I think, but the important thing I think we should emphasize here is that the beauty of democracy is that what O'Donnell, a former president of the International Political Science Association, called the perpetual crisis of democracy. Democracy is because it is open, it opens spaces, and the more spaces it opens, the more disaffected people are with the system. So that all that things can be better than they are, and the fact that you have unfulfilled aspirations, that is the stuff of democracy. You can never have a democracy in which there is consensus, 100% consensus in that sense. If you look at the U.S. today, I mean, we see what is going on in the U.S. today. There are serious problems of holding the federation together. But the struggle is going on within that whole context. And I think the important thing we need to realize in Nigeria is that you cannot have a system where there are no differences. And so the important thing is not to wish those differences, but let people express those differences in a democratic manner, realizing that, you know, there's some strength in unity while preserving your diversity. And it is interesting also that in spite the federal option is getting more and more popular in the world today, and that's why you have unitary systems making room for this what they will call a devolution of power. Yeah. You cannot have the old Austinian concept of sovereignty as being undivided. You know, okay. Which is one break from that concept of the state that federalism represented, that there can be two sovereign entities within a state. And the unitary state today is also accepting that you cannot have a centralized system, that there must be political decentralization or devolution. If you look at Africa today, even Cameroon, our neighbor, you look at South Africa, you know, you look at Kenya, they are essentially having a federal constitution, even though they don't want to use the word federal. But South Africa is effectively a federal system. Kenya today is effectively a federal system in terms of devolution of power and creating two quasi-sovereign entities.
Okay. Prof, two questions that are clear in my mind that I must ask you. One, what does restructuring Nigeria, what does it mean to you? Everybody's agitating. It's become, you know, like a buzzword in the Nigerian polity. We need to restructure, we need to restructure. What's your own interpretation of restructuring Nigeria? Or how would you like it to be done?
Look, I am sorry, you know, let me put it this way. Restructuring like federalism means different things to different people.
Yes.
It means different things to different people. And it is simply, you know, playing with words. Restructuring means give more powers to the states.
Okay.
What powers are you going to give to the states that they don't have now? Particularly on the concurrent list.
But for some,
I'm just raising that question.
Okay.
For some, restructuring means, you know, what you call fiscal federalism. But of course, giving more power to the states, but also giving them more money to pursue the activities. But for some, restructuring also means disaggregating the state level, giving local governments autonomy.
Yes.
You know, you cannot say, give us more powers vis-a-vis the federal government, and then you are not given, you are centralizing power at the state level and making nonsense of local governments.
Absolutely.
So that's why I'm saying that restructuring is, I think you said, it's a buzzword. It's a buzzword. It means different things to different people. And I think it is part of this whole play that our political elites are having of playing around and deceiving us that they're acting in our best interest. Because restructuring just means interest for restructuring means pursuing the interest of a fraction, a dissatisfied fraction of the political elite. It means that's exactly what it is. But why we? Why the poor people keep on suffering? Nobody is talking of restructuring in the context of implementing Chapter 2 of the Constitution of Nigeria.
The masses
of our people are poor. They are, they, you know, Chapter 2 is there, and they are hiding on that ground that Chapter 2 is non-justiciable. But non-justiciable doesn't mean that you should not do it.
All right.
Look at the amount of leakages in our system, money that is being stolen. And they keep saying they don't have money to provide universal free education. They don't have money to give people scholarship to go to university. Where in Ghana, university is virtually free. So the point is that we need to look at restructuring as part of the debate about among the elite to share power and the appropriations of power among themselves.
Yeah, I saw Dr. Shetty chuckling, when you were making your submission. I'm sure you would like to react briefly to one or two things that you've said. Let's listen to him, Prof. All right, go ahead, sir.
Yeah.
I appreciate that there are contending views, positions on restructuring.
Yeah.
I also appreciate that the discussion on federalism, on restructuring is ideological.
Mm.
I have identified, based on the literature, two major strengths. Ethnic nationality basis to interpret the question of restructuring, and class interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, are the two reconcilable? To what extent should we be discussing the class question in Nigeria? To what extent
My point is precisely that restructuring is at bottom about resolving the class issues among the political elite, not about the people.
Yeah,
it's not about ethnic.
Okay.
People are just manipulating, mobilizing ethnicity to pursue their class interest.
Okay, sir.
They are reducing the nationality, the national question to a question of ethnicity. No, the national question is a question of how do you bridge the gap between the poor and the rich.
Sir, just a minute, sir. Yes, I appreciate your point, sir. But I would rather argue for class interpretation of the national question.
There are struggles
at different strata, of the social classes to address the national question. The middle class and the upper middle class are equally involved in this struggle. The urban poor and the peasants, though the level of consciousness is rather low, but some fringe social movements in Nigeria and left political organizations are working on such. They're working on the consciousness of the urban poor and the rural peasants to raise class-based consciousness on the national question rather than ethnic nationality consciousness. The ethnic nationality narrative on the national question, in my view, is restrictive and limited. We should be addressing in more concrete terms the class question. The class question, in my view, would provide greater insights into the nature of socioeconomic crisis in Nigeria, the nature of political crisis, and it should also assist to provide alternatives, to Nigeria's political superstructure and substructure. Well, I'd like to raise the other issue about on restructuring. There's this narrative differentiating political and economic restructuring, which Prof alluded to. But beyond fiscal federalism, the left scholars are raising questions, and they're actually doing critique of the neoliberal economic system, which constitutes the fundamental of Nigeria's economic management. You know, the neoliberal economy and neoliberal economic management has been severely flawed in developing countries, particularly Nigeria. And restructuring would include addressing the question of restructure and neoliberalism and finding alternatives to the neoliberal option. The neoliberal economic management system has distorted the state in Nigeria. The state has become a withdrawing state. It has abandoned its social provisioning role. And the market is prevailing to the point that social provisioning issues, you know, are subjugated, you know, to subsidiary levels. Yeah. So the point I'm making, sir, is the economic resourcing question is equally imperative. It is beyond fiscal restructuring. We're raising questions on the management of the economy based on neoliberalism. And we're arguing that neoliberal system has failed. And we're also positing that Nigeria is at a trajectory that we need to evolve new developmental economic alternatives.
All right, let us shift gears a little bit. Prof, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm with you. I'm following Daley, and I think I accept his line of analysis. But there's one important point that I think is important to bring into consideration, and that is the nature of the state. The nature of the state at the national and the global level. You know, and we cannot talk of restructuring at the national, particularly African level, without linking it to the incorporation of Nigeria into the external world capitalist system, which creates a problem in terms of policy. Look, Chapter 2 of our Constitution is not neoliberal. It is, in fact, social democratic, or if you might call, developmental. And that's because there's been a movement in Africa pioneered by led by the ECA, to create what is called the developmental state, that the state has a role in providing for economic development. But of course, African countries are now captured within this global capitalist system with the World Bank and the IMF, breathing down the neck of African countries to pursue neoliberal programs as a conditionality. And the ECA fought hell and hell against them. In fact, that's the whole question about the failure of SAP. You know, because the World Bank and the IMF and the multilateral institutions keep pushing this global neoliberal agenda, which African countries are helpless to resist. And I think the problem with the left in Africa, particularly in Nigeria, is that beyond the level of talking, there's been no organization to force the state, for example, to implement Chapter 2 of our Constitution, which is not neoliberal. You know, that debate between neoliberalism and the developmental state was resolved even before the African Charter on Human and People's Rights.
Yeah.
Because our own Constitution of 79, our Constitution of 79, when we first introduced this Chapter 2, preceded the African Charter, but we have not been organized politically to emphasize that instead the state, even those of the left, are sucked in by the yes, that was my point about those who fought against Abacha in this country, those on the left, who claimed that they are not pursuing those kinds of policies. They've been sucked in by the state. And the United States country, beyond us talking, we are not organizing, but demand that certain policies be pursued that have the interest of the poor man, to the poor woman at heart. So we need to go beyond that. See, there are two levels of struggle that have to be. One is that we must organize ourselves in the country to demand that Chapter 2 be made effective. Number two, how do we address the global question? Because Nigeria and other African states are not, they are being surrounded by this neoliberal world system. And you cannot make any reform inside while you are still, you know, where they are still breathing down your neck. People like Trump and others.
Yeah.
China is coming in, and we are doing that. So we are in this island that even those who want to, this is no problem about African Union, for example. Agenda 2063 is about the developmental state or a social democratic state. But again, the AU is incapacitated because it is so much dependent on what on the foreign powers, the EU, the DFID, and also on dictating policies. And in some cases, there are people in our own ministries of planning and ministries of finance breathing down our neck.
All right, we hear you, Prof. Nice, your submission there. Let's take this discussion to some other area. And we might even still come back to this because I see that Dr. Delisha Teori is raring to go. But let me just take this. Now, let us look at Nigeria. Who exactly is the problem? Followership or leadership?
Look, that is what you call... That is what you call a pseudo problem. Those who are leaders must lead, and those who are following must insist on accountability.
Yep.
So that makes us is a symbiosis. It's not a real question. Mm. Is it the leaders who are the problem or the followers who are the problem? No, it does not describe the problem very well. That it is interconnected.
Mm.
You know, we place too many emphasis on false heroes, and all of these people, we know them, they are thieves. But we glorify them, we run after them, we chase after them, instead of making them accountable to
exactly.
us.
Exactly, that's a followership problem.
Yeah, that is the problem of leadership. No, it is intertwined. And if you look at, again, if you go back to chapter two says that sovereignty derives from the people, and that public authorities must provide for the people in terms of what is in chapter 2.
But don't we need to be a bit more...
But the political elite, the political leadership, is creating a gap between us and them by manipulating, mobilizing ethnicity as a political instrument. And we keep beating them that they are fighting for our ethnic interests.
So what's the solution? What's the solution moving forward for the Nigerian nation?
Well, it's a difficult question. We can only talk about it in general terms.
Yes.
I have always said, let the people of Nigeria, in terms of democracy, let the people take the initiative out of the hands of the political leadership and demand accountability from them.
Mm.
And the Constitution provides for that. Because the Constitution says that sovereignty resides in the people. And it is the people who appoint them, and they must be accountable to the people.
Yeah, but
it is a difficult problem. It is a complex problem, not to be solved overnight. But let us start talking about awareness that their leaders must be accountable to us, and we must hold them accountable. And that is why electoral politics becomes very, very important in terms of electoral reform. And the protection of the
people. All right. Thank you very much, Professor Adele Jinoju. Thank you for being a part of our Diamond Day Nigeria contributions. I'm sure one word from Dr. Adele Shetelu here before you go. Any last word for Prof?
Yes, I'd like to respond to one or two issues, sir, Prof, sir. Yes, Well, you emphasize repeatedly, sir, fundamental objectives and direct principles, sir. But we
yes.
cannot ignore that the Nigerian Constitution, the 99 Constitution as amended, is fundamentally flawed and structurally defective. The feedback that we get is that the Constitution fundamentally is not owned by the Nigerian people. This, for me, is a much more fundamental question and far more important than the fundamental objectives. We need to rethink a new Constitution that responds to the preferences and the yearnings of the working people and Obampo and peasants and the majority the mass of the people in Nigeria. This constitution, it's a military imposed constitution, does not reflect the preferences and the wishes of the people. It should be determined that we need a new constitution. We need to rethink the political and constitutional architecture of Nigeria. We actually need to create a new constitution. You know, and secondly, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
Don't let us deceive ourselves. Constitutions are always written by elites. What does the people's constitution mean? What has been discussed is in the process of doing it. In Kenya, when they wanted to revise their constitution, what they did was simply to set up a constituent assembly, which took the power out of the hands of the legislature. So the legislature more or less acceded to the constituent assembly, and then there was a draft constitution based on widespread discussion, and then it was put to the vote. There was a referendum to adopt the constitution. So if you want a people's constitution in Nigeria, whatever that means, let the question as drafted, who is going to sit down at the level of who are the people, except representatives of the people who are selected? Even drafting a constitution for a club alone, all the members of the club don't sit down, 100 members sit down, they excuse some people to do it, and there are people who are knowledgeable in it. And then it comes back, it is debated. I mean, look at India, for example, today. India has had its constitution since 1948. But they had a constituent assembly. We debated the constitution for several months before it was adopted. So we didn't say it's not a people's constitution. So I think, you see, it is this part of this war among the elite in our political environment, they keep trying to discredit national constitutions by saying that it is not the people's constitution. Those, for example, Pronaco, how many Yoruba did they consider? How many people did they consider before they wrote? Even those who say they have a Yoruba constitution, how many Yorubas had an input into it? And they are talking about it. So what is the more important is the process for adopting it.
I think
our political class, they keep fighting this fight among themselves when they lose out by trying to discredit what the winners had achieved. And they themselves are not reflecting what they are saying in themselves.
Ohanaeze,
for example, as important as it is, how many Igbos have they sat to consult, have let's say the 7 or 8 or 9 million Igbos in the Southeast country that you now come up with? So what I'm simply saying is that don't let us be deceived about all this thing about this military constitution. What are we doing with what we have?
All right, that's the point you're making.
I mean, take the question of this question of ethnic nationality, for example. You know, I mean, as between you in the Southwest now, there are about 6 states. But they were all in one state before, except Lagos, Western Region.
Yes.
And there were one people. Then you created or you then divided them, and you now create small interest. You know, that is even making regional cooperation more difficult. When Osun State was created out of Oyo State, the following morning they said all people from Osun State go back to your state. You are not Europeans, you are not with us.
Wow.
So I think what we need to do is to strengthen other forms of identity. We have been bogged down in this ethnic identity, and that is what is causing problem now. Let us go beyond ethnic identity and create solidarities along other identity groups, either intellectual, professional, religious, or whatever. Don't let ethnicity be the only overriding identity that we keep parading. As I said, because solidarity is about all kinds of diversities, not just ethnic diversity.
Yes, I agree. All right, thank you very much, Professor Adele Jinadu, Adjunct Professor of Political Science, University of Lagos. I'm sure our listeners...
Sorry. I'm no longer adjunct. I'm retired. I'm now just a senior fellow at the Center for Democracy and Development in Abuja.
Okay, thank you very
much. That's my current designation, yes.
All right. Bele, sorry about that.
Yes, sir.
All the best, Bele.
Okay, sir. I've been contacted. Well, eh? Yes,
thank you very much. Thank you, and okay. Truly bye-bye. Thank you for being a part
my,
of
my pleasure. Thank you very well. Happy Independence Day.
Same to you, sir.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, Spirit of Nigeria Radio, our democracy and Diamond Day anniversary edition continues when we come back after this timeout.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.